Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. Janet Grillo is my next guest. She's an award-winning independent filmmaker, an Emmy Award-winning producer, a former motion picture studio executive, and an associate arts professor at NYU Tisch School of the Arts undergrad program. So you get the picture of her career background and her career path. She is also the parent of an adult child with autism. And she's been invited as a non-scientist to speak this afternoon at the UC Davis Mind Institute. Her speech, by the way, is free and open to the public at 4:30 this afternoon. But we're going to start the conversation now, and Janet's in the studio. Welcome. It's great to have you here. Can we begin with your take on how people with autism are portrayed in pop culture, in popular media right now?
Yeah, sure. And thank you for making the distinction between pop culture and documentaries, because documentaries have a much wider range of portraiture. When we're talking about commercial mainstream television and movies, it tends to be the portrayal of a type of person that used to be called Asperger's. Mm. It's no longer technically a diagnosis or a criteria, but the community still, you know, they self-call themselves Asperger's, so I'm happy to say that. And that's a kind of a person for whom autism is really not a disability. It's sort of a differently abled kind of person, like you see in Big Bang,
there's atypical. A tech genius,
right? Tech
or
genius,
the Dustin Hoffman character in Rain Man.
Yeah. Although he was more impaired socially than the Big Bang people are, so they're sort of quirky genius types, and that's what you sort of see in popular media. And for sure, a percentage of people on the autism spectrum are that, but a much greater percentage is not, for whom the characteristics of autism are impediments for them to fulfill themselves, to function in the world, to live independently. And of course, as you go further in one direction of the spectrum, becomes more and more clear it's a full-on disability. And so my own experience is that as the mother of an autistic son, I found myself at a dinner party many years ago in California, and a very well-intentioned woman was chatting with me and saying, "Oh, so your son is autistic. What's his special skill?" And I thought, It is time to start speaking about the wider range of what autism means, what it looks like, so that we can understand each other better. Mm. You know, really, that isn't that what storytelling is best at, is creating bridges between the self and the other, so that we can put ourselves inside of the shoes of another person and understand and have that much more compassion, empathy, and perhaps make a bigger place in your life or in society for people who are not like you. And I think that's across the board the value of storytelling in any society. And I felt that I had a unique opportunity as somebody who's a professional storyteller, whose professional skill set is making movies, to share what my experience was as a mother of an autistic child.
How old is your son? And if I'm not being too personal, mm-hmm. can you describe some of the aspects of his autism and mm-hmm. your family living with that?
Sure. So my son is 25 and a half, and he's on the kind of what they call higher functioning level. I really don't like these monikers, but it's a language that's used in the community. And I think there's so many of us are uncomfortable with things like higher functioning, lower functioning, because when you've met one autistic person, you've met one autistic person. And that there's something so inherently judgmental about how people's nervous system manifest. So my son, he's not Asperger's, but you know, if you were to meet him, if you'd walk in the room right now, you wouldn't think anything was necessarily off about him. The longer you're talking to him, the more you realize something is different. But I want to say that in my experience and journey as his mother, I was around and close to families with children who are much more involved. And it's a kind of a sliding scale. You know, it's sort of like saying when you're pregnant, if you're 1 month pregnant, 3 month pregnant, 9 months pregnant, it's very different. But it's all being pregnant, right? So there's a kind of a continuum. And
can I pause you? When you say much more involved, do you mean the way it presented was much more intense?
Yeah, that your neurological system is much more involved and made different than a typical nervous system, right? So there are
coping
people
with that kind of a person with autism would be much more challenging, require much more in skills and support.
Right. Yeah, just so completely different. In fact, where I'm speaking later this afternoon at the Mind Institute, one of the big projects they've had is to do a genetic bank so that they can start to look at the underlying etiologies and in with the idea and the goal of making subcategories. Because right now, everybody is sort of being clumped under the same category called autism. Personally, this is just me speaking. I'm not a scientist. I suspect there will come a day when we don't even call a cluster of people autistic, that it's so different in kind. So you can't paint this community with one brush. Hence, the portrayal of autism like, you know, Sheldon in Big Bang is not going to serve families whose kids, where their neurology is so disorganized, they can't organize their body to move through space. They can't organize their the language to match what's inside their head. There's a lot of people who, through assistive technology, have been able now to communicate and, you know, were considered to be really remote, inaccessible, and probably mentally retarded. And then with assisted communication, you can find out they're fully cognitive inside, but their neurology doesn't allow them to make speech, right? So this is a very different set of circumstances than somebody like Sheldon in Big Bang. So although my son is, you know, more mildly impaired, I was very familiar with families and the challenges and people with more impairments. And when I set about to make my films, I felt, well, first of all, I don't have the right to tell his story. I don't. I have the right to tell my story. Mm-hmm. My story of living with, loving a child with these sets of challenges is something I have every right to tell. But I wanted to be clear that I was making a distinction. So I chose to tell stories about girls, not boys, and children who's manifested differently than my son. And I felt that I had the ability to access and portray more complex presentation because I'm of the community, because I'm so intimate with what autism is and all of its permutations. So I wasn't an autism tourist. And in both of the narrative fiction films that I've made, as opposed to the documentary I helped to produce, the narrative fiction films, I was able to really create characters, individual human beings with needs and feelings, goals and wants, who are very specific and particular, like any character in a good drama is, who happen to have the given circumstance of the neurology of autism. So there was no direction of now flap your hands or, you know, just have a tantrum. No, nothing's random and it was never external. It was always internally derived of what is the character thinking, feeling, needing, what's the goal, what's the action being played, and through the given circumstance of this nervous system, how does it manifest? So it's never voyeuristic. And again, in the movies that I've made, they're love stories. They're parent-child love stories. And it's really about the profound bond that develops, the intimacy that develops when you are raising a child who is so reliant upon you.
Jack of the Red Hearts, one of your films, was a Grand Jury Prize winner at the inaugural Bentonville Film Festival, which was founded, by the way, by Gina Davis. The key character here, Jack, is a tough teenage runaway. She's one of the females in your film. Mm-hmm. How about a sentence or two about the storyline before we listen to the clip?
Sure. Well, first I want to say that the script was written not by me, but by the woman who is the aunt of a niece who is very severely impacted by autism. Mm. And so she wrote this story, and I'll just tell you briefly, because she was fantasizing, couldn't there be a miracle worker who came into the home of her sister-in-law and brother and niece and could just make things better? And she thought, well, I can't make that happen, but I can fantasize it. I can write a script. So she wrote a beautiful screenplay, which I had the opportunity to direct. And in it, this character, Jack, is actually a teenage con artist. She's been sort of doing a lot of street scams, and she's got to lay low from the law for a little bit. And she scams her way by convincing a very, a mother in desperate straits that she herself is a trained behavioral therapist. And so the mother is able to go back to work because this girl moves in and is going to take care of the child. And of course, she knows nothing about autism. But once she's in the home, basically, because she doesn't have any preconceptions, she can relate to this child as a child.
And the child's name is?
The child's name is Glory.
So let's listen now to the clip.
Glory's no Rain Man, no genius, savant upside, but we like to think she has an exceptional personality. Will you do it?
I'll make it work. Oh! Oh! I'm on the short bus.
Donna, this is a class, not a circus.
Is our son Robert?
Robert, be nice.
Are you here to save the day?
Glory! Glory, come on. Not noodle time. Yeah. Get up.
We went over this. Undershirt, then pants, then shirt. Don't ask me why the order matters, but it does.
I got a job. I'm getting us a place. Come on, let go!
I don't want to feel like we're co-workers in a mental hospital.
She's autistic, so she needs someone with her, like, all the time.
How did you even get this job?
You don't just tell little fibs. Your lies are extraordinary.
Bethany, I have a couple people I'd like you to meet.
Would she have friends? Would she call me mommy?
She's low functioning.
Who's that?
Mommy.
Good. Good. She can be a lot more than she is if you give her a chance.
Low function in my ass.
That's from Jack of the Red Hearts. Janet Grillo is here talking about our films. And by the way, you can hear Janet this afternoon at the Mind Institute, a free and open to the public presentation at 4:30. Jack of the Red Hearts must, for some people, be a deep sigh of relief in hearing some of those scenes that hit so close to home, but maybe aren't revealed in their rawness anywhere else. Explain the noodle scene.
Okay. Well, that was actually derived directly from my experience with my son. There was a period of time when he was much younger where he would become very silly under stress if he was even being sort of pushed out of his comfort zone and feeling stressed out. He would just start to giggle and physically collapse like he was a noodle and sort of slinky, like fall off of the furniture and things like that and just become very floppy. And so when we were rehearsing with Jack the Red Hearts and the extremely gifted young actress Taylor Richardson, who plays Glory, we spent a couple of days doing just improvisations with Famke Janssen, who plays the mother, and Anna Sophia Robb, who plays Jack, the scammy con artist, right? Who, of course, becomes a very effective therapist, again, because she's just related to the child, not to a diagnosis, right, which is so important. And we're sort of like finding the way that they would all interact in the physicality, and I start to draw on a lot of things I remember my own son doing when he was younger. And so we incorporated and put that into the script where Gloria, in order to get out of doing her ABA trial drills, just starts to giggle and flop and fall on the floor.
Some of this language is so common to people who experience autism, but even to say an ABA trial drill is like Greek to someone else. Can I go back to the point that you are a non-scientist speaking at the UC Davis Mind Institute, which is all about the science and discovery of the brain, its functions, its malfunctions? So for you to be invited says what to you?
Well, I was completely surprised. In fact, I asked them twice. I said, are you sure? Really, me? I think it's wonderful that research scientists are interested to know what it's like on the ground. What are the realities and experiences of families? And so that it's personalized, personal. And we are all part of a community, all of us. And I know that that's become a little bit of a controversy with the neurodiversity movement, which I entirely respect. You know, these are sort of the more Aspie profile people are looking at the issue of autism as a civil rights issue and saying, don't cure me. It's not a disability. It's a different ability. And I completely agree with them. For them, that's true. And I know some of them, not all, but some have taken the position that only people, autistic people, are in the autism community. And I would disagree. I think community is wide. Families, people who live with love and help people with autism to fulfill their potential are all very passionately engaged.
You are getting some criticism, I guess, from some family members, adults who are saying, these stories shouldn't be told. This is, as you referred to earlier, this is private family business, and the person with autism can't represent whether they do or don't want their story told.
Right. Which is what I'm talking about today, the issue of representation. I think this is a complex matter, and I invite a conversation. So when I was asked by Mind Institute to come and give a talk, and I thought, well, what should I talk about? This is what came to mind, this very issue, because I want to be part of a conversation, invite the conversation to be had openly and publicly. There are many wounds to be healed. So the question is, who has the right to tell whose story? Hmm. I think that's very legitimate. It's a conversation that's being had throughout the media. As a filmmaker, it's an active conversation about, you know, women, people of color, transgendered, how are we being represented? And so it makes sense that this conversation is extending into the autism community. Of course, strongly, I believe, as a parent, I have every right to tell my story. I look forward to when autistic filmmakers will be making their movies and telling their stories. To my knowledge, that has not yet happened. I don't know of any autistic filmmaker who's made a full-length feature film sharing their experience. It may be out there and I just don't know it, but I don't know it yet. And I welcome, if there are any listeners that know of one, please, let's hear it. I do teach at NYU Film School. Absolutely, I have students who are autistic. Some, they self-identify and tell me. And so there certainly is a generation that will be educated and graduating with skill sets. I hope that they will share in this conversation by telling their stories directly. But in the meantime, I think there's a room for everybody at the table.
We will post the trailer for Jack of the Red Hearts on our website, as well as the trailer for Fly Away. But I want you to just say a little bit about that story. We won't have time to listen to the clip, but it was a dramatic competition best feature at South by Southwest's Film Festival. So the storyline of Fly Away is different.
Yes, this is a very personal film, which I did write. I wrote and directed. And this is the story of a single mother, of a daughter, who's severely impacted by autism. Her daughter's in her early teenage years, and she's considering what is going to sustain her child's adult future and her own future, and having to sort of come to terms with when loving your child means letting go, which is, as I said before, a parent-child love story. You know, in the parent-child love story, the only happy ending is one where the couple breaks up. And when you have a child who's been so dependent upon you, recognizing their need to be autonomous, their ability to be autonomous, is really complex. And so it's really about a mother, her own codependency, confronting her own codependency. So,
how much was that you? Were you a single mom at the time raising your son?
Yeah, it's a very closely autobiographical.
And did
film.
You have that look in the mirror realization about a codependency that was in the relationship and not serving it well?
You betcha. Mm. You betcha. Right. Mm. So it's a very personal story about my own growth. And again, you know, it's interesting because people who have neurotypical children relate to this movie as strongly as those who don't, because it is a crossroads that every parent reaches, where you have to take a look at your child and realize, you're not my baby anymore. And what do you do with all that?
What is the current statistic for autism in the population? I think for a while it had been 1 in 68.
You know, I should have this at my immediate recall. I think it's 161. Certainly, statistic is much higher for males than females. I think it's 5-to-1 ratio.
How do people find your movies?
They can be streamed online, a variety of platforms, including Amazon, Google Play, I believe Netflix. I'm not sure if Jack of the Red Hearts is on Netflix, but you can certainly stream it. I mean, if you just put Fly Away the movie and make a distinction between Fly Away Home, which is a different film from the 1990s, right, and Fly Away the movie, and then Jack of the Red Hearts, if you just enter those into your Google search bar, they will come up for which streaming platforms. You can definitely stream them online.
I'll mention again that you will be speaking at the UC Davis Mind Institute Auditorium. That's at 4:30 today. The lecture is open to the public. No reservation is needed. We'll post a link with more information. I truly appreciate this conversation. It's one that we should be having more, but the more art and topic material that's created, the more we have to talk about it. So welcome to Sacramento, and thank you for the conversation.
Thank you for this opportunity.
That is Janet Grillo. We'll post a link to her website, and again, those film trailers. It's at capradio.org/insight, and you're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.